An alle Aufsichtspersonen. Verteilen Sie jetzt die Aufgabenbogen für den Prüfungsteil Hörverstehen. Die Prüfung beginnt in 2 Minuten. An die Kandidatinnen und Kandidaten. Beschriften Sie jetzt das Deckblatt des Aufgabenbogens Hörverstehen. Achtung, lesen Sie die Aufgaben erst, wenn der englische Text beginnt. Kaufmännische Berufsmaturität 2013, Kanton Zürich, Englisch, Serie 1. This part of the examination consists of 2 different listening comprehension tasks. There will be pauses before and after each task to give you time to read the questions and to check your answers. You will hear each task twice. Task 1. In the first part of the test, you will hear a radio program about the design of future cities. As you listen, fill in the gaps 1 to 10 in the notes below. In some gaps, more than one word is necessary for a complete answer. You now have 90 seconds in which to look at task 1. Ready?
So, Shefani, you're an expert in urban planning and more specifically in transport. What do you envision in the future, let's say in 50 years from now?
50 years from now is quite a long time to project, but future cities would be green cities, cities that are able to sustain themselves. They can produce their own energy. They've got transport choices, so people can choose whether they want to walk or cycle or take the bus. A city that has a very well-connected public transport system. So if you want to get from A to B, you've got three main choices: public transport, walking, cycling, each equally good.
So basically you see a future of increased urbanization.
Increased urbanization, yes, because people are moving to the cities. That's what the figures say. It's what's happening. It's the current trend. And if this continues, the cities need to become more robust. They need to become more resilient. I know these are big words, but what I mean by that is that cities that are able to change with the times. If people are going to become more mobile, then we need a city with a good transport system. But in the future, there's a possibility that people won't be traveling so much, simply because the internet is taking over. Our social space is being invaded by the internet. And so if people aren't going out so much, we'd want cities with comfortable housing, comfortable buildings, heating, cooling, nicer places to be.
So in the future, if there are more cities or more densely populated cities, do you see any changes in public transportation?
Well, the theory states that the more density you have, the more feasible public transport becomes. This theory is absolutely true. So in saying that cities are going to become more densely populated and urbanized, public transport definitely has a future. I mean, if you think of a city like Beijing, for example, public transport is available. People travel by it. Why? Because it's available. It has to be available because there's such a vast number of people. But if you think about a city like Auckland, where I'm from, our public transport system is not very good because we are not densely populated and it doesn't make sense to put a bus where there aren't people. But then the counter argument is, if you put a bus, people would take it. So it's the chicken and egg. What comes first? Do you put a bus on a route where there aren't people or where the people aren't taking the bus? Or do you do it the other way around?
Interesting. And of the types of public transport, buses, rail and subways, which do you see will have a greater impact in the future?
Well, I think it all depends on where you are. But trains will definitely be the way of the future. Trains and buses combined, I think. Because people like travelling long distances in the shortest amount of time possible. Trains are your solution for that. But for shorter journeys, connecting different train stations or connecting homes to the train stations, obviously you're going to need buses. One can't really function without the other.
So maybe one of your biggest challenges is going to be getting people to give up their love affair with cars?
Oh, that's always difficult. Trying to tell a car enthusiast that he should not drive his car ever again will become their worst nightmare. It's not something that's easily achievable. I myself am guilty of that. I used to have a turbo Nissan Silvia when I was growing up in my teenage years. And if someone told me not to drive my car, I think I would be very mad. So yes, it's quite a barrier that I have to go through.
Well, good luck.
Thank you. I'm going to need it.
Now listen again and check your answers. Ready?
So, Shefani, you're an expert in urban planning and more specifically in transport. What do you envision in the future, let's say in 50 years from now?
50 years from now is quite a long time to project, but future cities would be green cities, cities that are able to sustain themselves. They can produce their own energy. They've got transport choices, so people can choose whether they want to walk or cycle or take the bus. A city that has a very well-connected public transport system. So if you want to get from A to B, you've got three main choices: public transport, walking, cycling, each equally good.
So basically, you see a future of increased urbanization.
Increased urbanization, yes. Because people are moving to the cities. That's what the figures say. It's what's happening. It's the current trend. And if this continues, the cities need to become more robust. They need to become more resilient. I know these are big words, but what I mean by that is that cities that are able to change with the times. If people are going to become more mobile, then we need a city with a good transport system. But in the future, there's a possibility that people won't be traveling so much, simply because the internet is taking over. Our social space is being invaded by the internet. And so, if people aren't going out so much, we'd want cities with comfortable housing, comfortable buildings, heating, cooling, nicer places to be.
So, in the future, if there are more cities or more densely populated cities, do you see any changes in public transportation?
Well, the theory states that the more density you have, the more feasible public transport becomes. This theory is absolutely true. So in saying that cities are going to become more densely populated and urbanized, public transport definitely has a future. I mean, if you think of a city like Beijing, for example, public transport is available. People travel by it. Why? Because it's available. It has to be available because there's such a vast number of people. But if you think about a city like Auckland, where I'm from, our public transport system is not very good because we are not densely populated and it doesn't make sense to put a bus where there aren't people. But then the counter argument is, if you put a bus, people would take it. So it's the chicken and egg. What comes first? Do you put a bus on a route where there aren't people, or where the people aren't taking the bus, or do you do it the other way around?
Interesting. And of the types of public transport, buses, rail and subways, which do you see will have a greater impact in the future?
Well, I think it all depends on where you are. But trains will definitely be the way of the future. Trains and buses combined, I think. Because people like travelling long distances in the shortest amount of time possible. Trains are a solution for that. But for shorter journeys, connecting different train stations or connecting homes to the train stations, obviously you're going to need buses. One can't really function without the other.
So maybe one of your biggest challenges is going to be getting people to give up their love affair with cars?
Oh, that's always difficult. Trying to tell a car enthusiast that he should not drive his car ever again will become their worst nightmare. It's not something that's easily achievable. I myself am guilty of that. I used to have a turbo Nissan Silvia when I was growing up in my teenage years, and if someone told me not to drive my car, I think I would be very mad. So yes, it's quite a barrier that I have to go through.
Well, good luck.
Thank you. I'm going to need it.
This is the end of task one. You now have 30 seconds to check your answers. Now turn to task two. Task two. In the second part of the test, you will hear an interview with a woman who talks about a bike trip in Cambodia. For questions 1 to 10, mark the best answer A, B or C. You now have 90 seconds in which to look at task two. Ready?
So, Julia, I was looking at your website and I noticed that you did a bike trip to Cambodia.
Yes, that's right. I joined an organization called PEPI and we did a ride from Siem Reap to Vietnam, Ho Chi Minh City.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Thank you.
So, how did you do this trip? Was it through some organization?
Well, actually, it was a couple of friends of mine who lived in the same town as me, and it was their idea. They'd been to Cambodia and they wanted to go back, and they wanted to do something somehow to help in some way. They recognised there was a problem with education in Cambodia, availability of education. They wanted to build a school, so they went online and they found an organisation through which they could, if they raised the funds, this organisation would build a school for them. And so we incorporated the bike ride as part of the fundraising and as part of the learning process. We wanted to actually go to Cambodia and see the country, as much of the country as possible.
That sounds great. So first let's talk about the bike ride. What exactly were the details of the trip?
Well, this ride has now become an annual event, and obviously that was the first one, so the details were a little sketchy in the beginning. We were kind of making it up as we went along. We planned for about a year in terms of preparation, physical training and planning the routes and raising the money and deciding where we'd stay, how long it'd take, all that kind of thing. We hired bikes from a company in Cambodia when we got there. They were mountain bikes. We had panniers, you know, these special transport bags for bikes. We actually got a company that sponsored us for those so we could carry stuff with us. And we visited about 17 organizations during the ride, and other NGOs, other educational organisations. We also visited a few of the other schools that were part of the same project, and we took with us teaching materials because we did some English classes and some environmental awareness classes as we rode. So those organisations kind of were the pinpoints of where we stopped and stayed.
What were the road conditions like that you were riding on?
I'd say at least half, maybe more than half, were unpaved roads. Thankfully, Cambodia's very flat, so it wasn't too difficult. We averaged about 70-80 kilometres a day, but on some days it was like 35 degrees. It was hot, so we tried to leave at around 6 o'clock in the morning. A lot of mornings we saw the sunrise. We'd grab some breakfast at a roadside market or something, noodles, that kind of thing. The roads were unpaved, and the dirt in Cambodia is very red. It's like a red clay.
But very dusty, though, right?
Very dusty, so we had to wear scarves round our faces. When we arrived in the evenings at our destination, we were absolutely filthy, and I always looked at myself and thought, wow, I've got such a great tan today. And then I got out of the shower and realised it was all dirt, completely dirt. So we'd have to... Yeah, a lot of Cambodians, I think it's called a krama. It's a kind of scarf they wear around the mouth when they travel in the back of trucks, because the dust is phenomenal.
The dust in some ways might have helped with maybe sun protection from the rays. Did you find that because you were covered in dust that maybe you didn't get sunburned?
I did put a lot of sunscreen on every day because I was worried about that. And perhaps it did protect us, yeah, in that way. But it did make us dirtier.
So what did the locals think? So you're driving through this, you know, Cambodia is a very rural country.
It is. And we chose some of the most rural areas because we wanted to see some of the more picturesque places. I mean, it's stunning. The landscape there was stunning. There's a word in the Cambodian language for foreigner, which is barang, and we got very used to hearing this word. Kids would come running across the fields shouting, barang, barang, barang. And they'd line the roads and they'd be going, hello, 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 I love you, hello, hello. So we got used to all this waving and cheering. I think they probably thought we looked like we were from another planet because we were on these quite high-tech mountain bikes, laden with front and rear panniers. We had some film equipment with us. A friend of ours had put a bracket on the front of his handlebars with a camera on it, and we would often have our iPods and digital cameras out. They'd probably never seen anything like us coming through. And then when we'd stop at these sort of roadside cafes, we'd just lay our bikes down beside the road and they'd all come round. But they were so polite and courteous. They're a very reserved people. They never touched any of our stuff. They were always very respectful and I had a very positive experience. Before we went there, I met quite a few people, quite a few Cambodians even, who said, "You can't do it, it's dangerous. You know you can't do it. You're going to get robbed, there's bandits, it's going to be really dangerous." But we didn't encounter a single danger. And in the whole 2 months, six riders, we had one puncture in the whole time. It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing.
You only had one flat tire?
One flat tire, that was it. And we had no problems with the bikes.
And these are bumpy roads.
Bumpy roads, yeah. We were blessed. We actually went and had a blessing in a Buddhist temple before we set out. And the monk blessed us and blessed us for safe travel, blessed our bikes. And that was a nice ritual to do before we embarked. And it worked.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Now listen again and check your answers. Ready?
So, Julia, I was looking at your website and I noticed that you did a bike trip to Cambodia.
Yes, that's right. I joined an organization called PEPI and we did a ride from Siem Reap to Vietnam, Ho Chi Minh City.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Thank you.
So, how did you do this trip? Was it through some organization?
Well, actually, it was a couple of friends of mine who lived in the same town as me, and it was their idea. They'd been to Cambodia and they wanted to go back, and they wanted to do something somehow to help in some way. They recognized there was a problem with education in Cambodia, availability of education. They wanted to build a school, so they went online and they found an organization through which they could, if they raised the funds, this organization would build a school for them. And so we incorporated the bike ride as part of the fundraising and as part of the learning process. We wanted to actually go to Cambodia and see the country, as much of the country as possible.
That sounds great. So first, let's talk about the bike ride. What exactly were the details of the trip?
Well, this ride has now become an annual event, and obviously that was the first one, so the details were a little sketchy in the beginning. We were kind of making it up as we went along. We planned for about a year in terms of preparation, physical training, and planning the routes and raising the money and deciding where we'd stay, how long it'd take, all that kind of thing. We hired bikes from a company in Cambodia when we got there. They were mountain bikes. We had panniers, you know, these special transport bags for bikes. We actually got a company that sponsored us for those, so we could carry stuff with us. And we visited about 17 organizations during the ride, and other NGOs, other educational organizations. We also visited a few of the other schools that were part of the same project. And we took with us teaching materials because we did some English classes and some environmental awareness classes as we rode. So those organizations kind of were the pinpoints of where we stopped and stayed.
What were the road conditions like that you were riding on?
I'd say at least half, maybe more than half, were unpaved roads. Thankfully, Cambodia's very flat, so it wasn't too difficult. We averaged about 70, 80 kilometres a day, but on some days it was like 35 degrees. It was hot, so we tried to leave at around 6 o'clock in the morning. A lot of mornings we saw the sunrise. We'd grab some breakfast at a roadside market or something, noodles, that kind of thing. The roads were unpaved, and the dirt in Cambodia is very red. It's like a red clay.
But very dusty, though, right?
Very dusty, so we had to wear scarves round our faces. When we arrived in the evenings at our destination, we were absolutely filthy, and I always looked at myself and thought, wow, I've got such a great tan today. And then I got out of the shower and realised it was all dirt, completely dirt. So we'd have to... Yeah, a lot of Cambodians, I think it's called a krama. It's a kind of scarf they wear around the mouth when they travel in the back of trucks because the dust is phenomenal.
The dust in some ways might have helped with maybe sun protection from the rays. Did you find that because you were covered in dust that maybe you didn't get sunburned?
I did put a lot of sunscreen on every day because I was worried about that. And perhaps it did protect us, yeah, in that way. But it did make us dirtier.
So what did the locals think? So you're driving through this, you know, Cambodia is a very rural country.
It is. And we chose some of the most rural areas because we wanted to see some of the more picturesque places. I mean, it's stunning. The landscape there was stunning. There's a word in the Cambodian language for foreigner, which is barang, and we got very used to hearing this word. Kids would come running across the fields shouting, barang, barang, barang. and they'd line the roads and they'd be going, hello, 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 I love you, hello, hello. So we got used to all this waving and cheering. I think they probably thought we looked like we were from another planet because we were on these quite high-tech mountain bikes, laden with front and rear panniers. We had some film equipment with us. A friend of ours had put a bracket on the front of his handlebars with a camera on it, and we would often have our iPods and digital cameras out. They'd probably never seen anything like us coming through. And then when we'd stop at these sort of roadside cafes, we'd just lay our bikes down beside the road and they'd all come round, but they were so polite and courteous. They're a very reserved people. They never touched any of our stuff. They were always very respectful, and I had a very positive experience. Before we went there, I met quite a few people, quite a few Cambodians even, who said, you can't do it, it's dangerous. You know you can't do it, you're going to get robbed, there's bandits, it's going to be really dangerous. But we didn't encounter a single danger. And in the whole 2 months, six riders, we had one puncture in the whole time. It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing.
You only had one flat tire?
One flat tire, that was it. And we had no problems with the bikes.
And these are bumpy roads.
Bumpy roads, yeah. We were blessed. We actually went and had a blessing in a Buddhist temple before we set out. And the monk blessed us and blessed us for safe travel, blessed our bikes. And that was a nice ritual to do before we embarked. And it worked.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
This is the end of task two. You now have 2 minutes to check your answers. This is the end of the listening comprehension test. Stop writing and hand in your papers.